All right, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the last session of TechEd 2012. I'm actually quite surprised to see so many people still here. I thought if it wasn't the result of the conference party and people sneaking off early, lunch would have been at least enough incentive. So I'm actually really happy to see this many people still here. My name's Justin Cook. I'm the principal consultant leading our systems management and end-user computing teams at Data3, and I'm excited to be presenting today with one of my colleagues, Noel Fairclough, who's a consultant within the same team. Noel and I both also act on behalf of Microsoft in a technical pre-sales capacity as data center virtual technology solutions professionals, where we work with Microsoft and their customers positioning system center products and virtualization like Hyper-V in a pre-sales capacity. So what we're going to talk about today is using System Center 2012 to help you configure and deploy infrastructure components that will support your private clouds. So it's going to be a session that's going to be focused predominantly on VMM, but we're also going to cover off a tiny little bit about Config Manager and where we could use that, and then we're going to finish off with some Service Manager and some Orchestrator. So we're going to talk about System Center 2012. The first part of the session is going to be going into the configuration and deployment of the infrastructure components, which is the underlying platform to support the private cloud. That's going to be pretty much fairly heavily slide-focused with a demo at the end, and then the remaining part of the session is going to be pretty much mostly demo-focused. So the second part is going to be configuring and deploying the private cloud infrastructure once we've got that underlying infrastructure to support it. And then we'll talk about some Service Manager and some Orchestrator capabilities. So we've all heard of infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, but us as IT pros or IT departments, we're really delivering IT as a service to our end users or our customers. So there's a number of things we need to have in place to be able to support delivering IT as a service, and System Center 2012 delivers us that capability. We're going to need some self-service capabilities. So we're going to need some way that users can initiate requests to complete these service requests. We're going to need some service delivery and some automation capabilities. We're going to want to be able to configure and deploy things automatically, things like applications, operating systems, Windows updates. We want to be able to not only deploy them, but we want to also monitor those systems and make sure that they're healthy and that they've received those updates correctly. So these are the components within the System Center 2012 suite that are important to us. So the area that we're going to focus on predominantly is going to be the right-hand side of the slide. So configuring and deploying our bare metal physical hosts to bring them into our Hyper-V host groups, setting up Hyper-V as our hypervisor, building our private clouds and making them available so that they can support our virtual machines and our services that we want to deploy. So this would probably be a pretty common scenario for most people in the room. You know, we're trying to support a real diverse set of infrastructure. We've got multiple different types of networking vendors within our environment. We might have different VLANs, different subnets. Networking can get pretty complex, especially if you're trying to understand the topology. Then the middle layer, what we're representing there is all of the different types of hardware vendors, so the different servers. You know, we might have HP, we might have Dell, we might have IBM storage, IBM servers, as well as multiple different hypervisors. And then the bottom layer, where we're looking at storage, we've got different types of storage vendors, but we might also have some fiber channel storage in there and some iSCSI storage. So in this example, it's spread across multiple data centers. And often we're trying to make the most out of the hardware that we've got, so some of this hardware might be dedicated to a particular environment, but we might also try to share some of that hardware. So when we're building a platform for virtualization, what we want to do is we want to actually bring it together into these logical and standardized pools. So you can see what we've done now is we've grouped those different fabrics together, our network, our compute, and our storage fabrics together to make it into something that's a little bit more logical and easy to understand. So once we can pool these resources together, we can abstract those resources out and we can start to build our private clouds. And private clouds are really just a way that we can pool resources together so that we can make them available to our end users to use. So once we've built these private clouds, we can start to delegate permissions to them. So we can create user roles, assign users or groups to those user roles, and give them some resources that they can actually use. And then finally, we want to control exactly what users deploy into these private clouds that we've built. So we can build these standard services via service templates, that actually control exactly what they can present out into these private clouds. So they're not just randomly deploying systems that we may have to support, but they're deploying things that we control and actually know about. So the first part I'm going to talk about is how we actually configure and deploy the infrastructure components to support the private cloud. So the three fabrics that we need to make up the infrastructure to support our private cloud, we need a compute fabric, we need a storage fabric, and we need a network fabric. So the compute fabric is what I talked about, was the different types of physical server hardware and the different hypervisors that we need to support. Because we don't care what that underlying hardware is, we don't care what the hypervisor is, we just want to know that there's CPU and there's memory available to us for our virtual machines and our services. The same with storage. We don't care what the storage vendor is, we don't care whether it's iSCSI, we don't care if it's Fibre Channel, we just want to know that storage is available to us for us to host our virtual machines and our services in. And the network, we just want to know that there's these logical networks available. When I create a virtual machine and I want to connect it into our production network, I don't care what VLAN it needs to go into. Certainly as I'm not a network guy, I just want to select production and it be connected. And then we take these three fabrics and we cluster them together. And that builds the foundation for us, for our private cloud. So when we want to actually bring new virtualization hosts into our environment, there's a couple of ways we can do it. So two components within the System Center product, we've got Config Manager and Virtual Machine Manager that both support bare metal deployment. I'm sure everyone's familiar with Config Manager. It's been doing it for years now, being able to build a bare metal machine, put an operating system on it, put applications on it, manage the updates on it, and then manage the lifecycle of that device. Well, we can do something similar with Virtual Machine Manager for not only your virtual machines, but also for bare metal hosts that we want to add into our host groups. So the first thing we need to do is understand which component we want to use in which scenario. If we're deploying just a physical server and it's not going to run a hypervisor, so it's not going to have the Hyper-V role deployed, then we're just going to use Config Manager in the traditional way. We'll use the operating system deployment feature. We'll boot the system, lay the OS down, install the necessary apps, and we'll manage it like we would any type of client. However, if we're deploying a system that's going to become a Hyper-V host, then we can also use Virtual Machine Manager to do that. And I'm going to go through the process for that in a little bit. So it will also boot a bare metal machine and lay an image onto that machine so that it can be used to add itself into our host groups. Virtual Machine Manager can also be used to deploy virtual machines for obvious reasons, and there's advantages to that too, because we can leverage snap provisioning and it gives us a much faster deployment time when we want to deploy virtual machines. Now, when we're going to manage the updates, Virtual Machine Manager will allow you to manage updates for your physical Hyper-V host. And the great thing about that is it'll allow you to actually keep all of the hosts within your host groups up to date at the same patch level, and will tell you when any of those hosts fall out of compliance. Now, when it comes to managing multiple hypervisors and the virtual machines that we're hosting on top of them, for update management processes, we're going to need to rely on Config Manager to do that so that we can keep the virtual machines up to date. So here's the process we need to go through when we want to deploy a brand new Hyper-V host that doesn't currently have an operating system on it. So first of all, we need to actually jump into the Virtual Machine Manager console and register that new hardware device that we're going to deploy to. Because we need to know things like the MAC address. And that, what we do is when we register that is we're actually authorizing it to get an image to support addition into our host group. So once we've actually registered it, the Virtual Machine Manager server is going to talk to the baseboard management controller on that physical machine and initiate an out-of-band reboot. That system's going to reboot. It's going to locate a WDS server within the same subnet. That server is going to talk to the Virtual Machine Manager server and just firstly identify whether it's authorized to Pixie boot. If it is authorized to Pixie boot, then that host will be able to download WinPE from the WDS server. So now that's enabling this bare metal system that currently doesn't have an OS on it to boot into a WinPE environment that we can now control. Once it first boots up, it's going to run a number of scripts that we've got pre-built into WinPE, and it's going to prepare that system. So things like configuring the partitions on the disk so that we can lay an operating system on there. Once it's done that and it's sitting in PE ready to go, it's actually going to download a VHD from our Virtual Machine Manager library. So it's not actually using an installed operating system, it's just pulling a VHD down and it's going to boot from VHD from then on. It's going to run a plug-and-play detection, and it's going to download all of the drivers that are available based on that plug-and-play detection that are sitting in the VMM library server. And it's going to inject those drivers into that downloaded VHD. So it'll mount the VHD and insert those drivers in there so that when we get to the next step where we reboot into the mini setup wizard, it's going to run through the finalization, it's going to add those drivers, and it's going to join the domain for us. It'll enable the Hyper-V role. Once it's enabled that Hyper-V role, it's going to reboot and it's going to join our host group. So now we've got two servers in our host group, one that was already there and a new one that we've added in. And all we've had to do so far is just add it into the Virtual Machine Manager console and enable it for configuration. So once it's added into the host group, there's a couple of things we still need to do. We need to actually allow it to use an existing logical network or create a new logical network and connect it to one of the external interfaces. And we need to allow it to connect to some storage. So we need somewhere for those virtual machines to be located, connected to that host. So that's preparing our compute resources or our compute fabric. Now we want to talk about how we can utilize the tools in Virtual Machine Manager to optimize our storage management. Now, before we get too far into this is not about replacing your existing storage management tools. Are there any storage admins in the room? A couple? So you guys would be familiar with the three no policy. Anytime us, or certainly myself, I might be asking the wrong questions, goes to the storage guys looking for more storage, it's typically after the third no that I'll get a yes. So what we're able to do now is the storage guys can actually allocate us a pool of storage, and we can manage that pool of storage within Virtual Machine Manager. So we don't have to keep going and bugging the storage guys every time we need a little bit more storage. We've been allocated this pool of storage now that we can manage ourselves. So we can do things like create LUNs within that pool of storage, assign it to the necessary hosts or clusters, and then we can also when we delete those clusters, that can get allocated back into our storage pool so that we can continue to manage that storage again. We can do end-to-end mapping, and that's important for troubleshooting. So we've always been able to understand which virtual machines are running on which hosts. But previously, we didn't actually know which virtual machines or which VHDs were existing on which LUNs. So now we can actually physically map that out. And if we're having performance issues on disks or on virtual machines, maybe we can troubleshoot that back to being all located on a single LUN. So that might help us there. And if our LUNs support rapid provisioning, we can use that when we want to provision our virtual machines. So we can just snap provision them now instead of having to copy that file across to the new location and then build it from there. So here's the storage allocation process and how it works. We use an SMIS provider that exists on your network, and it goes and discovers the storage that's available to us. So once we've discovered that storage, we create these classification pools. And the reason we do that is because you don't want to have all of your different types of storage in one classification pool, as we did with the previous version of Virtual Machine Manager. Now we can classify it, like I've done here, into Tier 1 and Tier 2. So your fibre channel might be Tier 1, yet all of your iSCSI type storage would be Tier 2. So your faster disk is going to be your Tier 1 type storage. So once we've discovered this storage and we've created these classification pools and we've added the storage into the classification pools, we need to actually assign that to a host group. So we make it available to a particular host group, and obviously all the hosts and clusters contained within that host group. And then we assign any existing LUNs that exist on that storage that we've discovered to either hosts or clusters, and we can also create new LUNs to any hosts or clusters also within that host group. So that's the storage fabric now. So the third piece of the puzzle is the network fabric, so the logical abstraction of your network infrastructure. So what we want to do is, rather than have that complex underlying network, is have a very simple logical network to present out to our users, because they just want to know, I need a server connected to a DMZ, I need a server connected to production, or I need a server connected to development. Keeping it really simple, and that just maps to interfaces in your hosts and obviously the underlying network. And Virtual Machine Manager uses address pools as well. How many people keep a manual register of their static IP addresses that they assign? A lot of people do. And it's difficult. People might not keep it up to date properly. I certainly find them difficult to maintain. So Virtual Machine Manager can actually maintain that for you for your virtual machines automatically. So you create a pool of IP addresses, and IP addresses will be allocated out of that pool and maintained within the Virtual Machine Manager console. And it does that for MAC addresses as well. So at all times, you can jump in the VMM console and see your automatic table of IPs and MACs that have been assigned. We can also manage load balancers now. So we create these virtual IP templates that contain configuration that you want to automatically be able to assign to load balancers when you're trying to create a load balancer for a web app that you might be hosting. And we'll go into some more detail about that. So I'll show you how the logical networks work in this example. So from an end user perspective, they don't need to know that we've got this complex networking underneath. Because what we've done is we've gone through and we've created this logical and standardized groups of resources. And you can see here we've created a DMZ and a prod logical network. So the users, after they've been delegated permissions, have created services within their own private clouds, and they've had the ability to automatically assign the relevant interfaces of their applications directly to the necessary networks. So back to the IP, to the address pools, from an IP address pool perspective, what it does is when you create the virtual machine, it actually grabs an IP out of the pool even before you install an OS and assigns it to that virtual machine or to that network interface that you've got in that virtual machine. And then it remains with that virtual machine for the life of the virtual machine. So until you delete that VM, it will stay with that. When you delete the VM, it's automatically put back into the pool. It's not like DHCP where you need to set a reservation, or when you reboot your machine, there is the chance that it could change. It is fixed with that machine. And the MAC pools work exactly the same. Now, when it comes to the virtual IP pools, it is just an IP address, so it's actually a subset of the main IP pool. But because your virtual IPs are only assigned when we create services, they're only assigned or returned as a service is created or as a service is deleted. So Noel's going to take you through a demo a little later on where we can show these service templates, how they can be made up of multiple tiers, and we can have load balancers in there as well. That's where this is important. So how does it work? Unlike storage, where you've got the common SMIS provider to use that's standard across the storage vendors, there wasn't anything like that for load balancers. So Microsoft had to work with these partners to develop providers so that from VMM, they could automatically configure the load balancers. So there's a provider been developed for F5, for Brocade, for Citrix, and of course the Microsoft Network Load Balancer. So what we do is we need to deploy that load balancer, connect to the provider, it performs the configuration for us, and it applies the IP template. And the IP template will have all the configuration that we need to support the service that we're deploying, including things like our load balancing method, whether we're going to use round robin. Okay, one more slide before our first demo. I told you there was a lot of content at the start. So, host clusters. The ability now to build your cluster from directly within Virtual Machine Manager. No longer do you have to jump out of the VMM console and go back to your failover cluster manager to perform all of your cluster configuration. It's really easy to actually do it via the wizard within the Virtual Machine Manager console. You still have the ability to go through your cluster validation or skip it if you're in a hurry and you're doing a demo. But you've got all of that same capability, and it's so much easier. We can add storage into the cluster from the VMM console. When we delete the cluster, the storage can be allocated back to our pool. And with that, I'm going to hand over to Noel, and he'll take you through the first demo around cluster creation.
Thanks a lot, Justin. Okay, so can I just get a show of hands? How many people in here have created a cluster using the cluster manager? Yeah, there's a few. How many of you found it a painful process? Yeah, a couple more. Yeah, it wasn't the best thing to do in the world, was it? All right, so what we're going to do today is we're going to create a Hyper-V cluster using my two nodes here. And it's so easy, you're not going to believe it. All right, so we're in the VMM console, and we're in the fabric section. So here we can see all the stuff that makes up the fabric in my environment. So I've got the networking, I've got the storage, and I've got my servers. So under the Contoso host group, you can see I've got two nodes already added, SCOM01 and SM01, and these are the ones I'm going to use to make a Hyper-V cluster. But let's just say I hadn't discovered them yet. How do I do that? Just simply right-click and add Hyper-V host. I can also add a Xen server host or an ESX server host, but in this environment I haven't got any, so we'll just go with a Hyper-V. And it starts a wizard. So here I can just run an active search Active Directory. Just give it a run as account. And here I can specify an Active Directory query. So another server I have in this environment is a domain controller. So I'll just add that. So it's created the query for me. And just like that, I can add the host to my host group. Now, because the domain controller hasn't got Hyper-V installed on it already, VMM is asking me, do you want to install the Hyper-V role? So I'll say yes. And here I can just add it to the host group. So I'm not going to actually use DC1 for this part of the demo, but I just wanted to show you how I got those previous hosts in there. So let's create the Hyper-V cluster. So up here, I go create Hyper-V cluster. I'll give it a name. Give it some privileges. Now, here it's asking me which host group do I want to add these servers to. Oh, sorry. It's asking me which host group are the servers in that I want to add to the cluster. So obviously, they're in the Contoso host group. So I'm just adding them there. Now, if you're going through this process and the servers that you want aren't in the correct host group, you can simply move them. You just, on the left-hand side over here, just right-click and move your host to the right host group. Just note that each host can only be part of one, can only be a member of one host group. Now, as Justin mentioned before, in the failover cluster manager, you could validate your cluster settings. VMM gives you the same option, but in the interest of time, we'll just skip it. However, if you do this, please do validate your cluster settings. Here I can assign an IP. I can either manually type an IP or pull an IP from an IP pool. Now here it's detected the storage I have in my environment, and you can see it's already picked the smallest LUN as the witness disk. And for this other LUN, the 5 gig one, say I want to make this a clustered shared volume, all I do is just tick this tick box. That's it. That's all there is to it. We'll do a quick format. I can assign it to a virtual network, or a logical network, sorry. And I want my VMs to be able to, I want my host to be able to talk to the VMs through this network. And that's it. That's all there is to it. So that is now going to cluster those two servers for me. If we jump into jobs, you can see right now, it's performing all the actions that I would normally have to do in the cluster manager previously.
Pretty easy, isn't it? It's really impressive how what a great job Microsoft have done of simplifying that process. So now we've gone through how we configure and deploy the infrastructure components necessary to support our private cloud. We've looked at storage infrastructure management. We've looked at the logical network abstraction as well. And Noel took us through the demo of how we can create those clusters. So now we want to look at how we can configure and deploy the private clouds. So transforming the data center into a private cloud, we had to go ahead and then abstract all of those resources, get it into that logical and standardized format, abstract them out so that we could build the private clouds. We needed to be able to support, you know, multiple different hardware vendors, multiple different hypervisors. We needed to be able to delegate access, and we needed to be able to standardize what users could do and deploy within the private clouds. So deploying the private cloud, first of all, with VMM. So abstracting those resources out and to create the private cloud, Noel's going to take you through a demo that's going to show you how quickly and easily we can do that.
All right, so back in the VM console, right now I'm in VMs and services. My cluster's been created, or it's probably still underway. Yep, still being created. So that will just run in the background. So to create my own private cloud, just right-click Create Clouds. Just give it a name. Now, this is where I can assign the resources to my cloud. At the moment, I only have the Contoso host group, so I'll add that. But you'll notice down the bottom here, if I had any VMware resource pools, I could also add those. But in this environment, I don't have any, so we'll just continue. Can just assign it to a logical network. I can assign a Microsoft load balancer to it. Now here I can add any VIP profiles. So a VIP profile or a virtual IP profile contains settings that are specific for a type of network traffic. So if I wanted to specify particular options for network traffic that was coming in over the load balancer, a VIP profile is where I would specify that. So in this environment, I don't have any, so we'll skip to the next step. I can assign any additional storage that I might have. And this is where I can add the VMM libraries that are available to my environment. So when users create VMs in this cloud, the library is where they'll be stored. Now, here's the thing. I can restrict capacity of this cloud. So this cloud will run, obviously, on a Hyper-V host or a Hyper-V cluster. And I don't want people cutting sick in there and just, you know, building millions of VMs. I want to be able to control what happens in that cloud so it doesn't use up all the system's resources. So here you can see I can restrict the amount of virtual CPUs that can be allocated to this cloud, the amount of memory, and how many virtual machines, and also the amount of storage. So let's just make a few changes here. Right, so I'm restricting this, So I'm restricting this cloud to 20 virtual CPUs, 100 gigs of storage of my available 306, and only 10 virtual machines. Now here I can assign a capability profile. So a capability profile is a profile that I can set up where I can allocate different types of templates. So here I've got, what we're looking at is what's out of the box. So I can either restrict this particular cloud to just Hyper-V, or I can restrict it to ESX and Hyper-V hypervisors only. But what I can also do is create different capability profiles. If I wanted to create sort of like a service offering, where I had like a gold, silver, or a bronze service offering, or large, medium, small VM offering, where the small might be 1 gig of RAM and one CPU. So this, by using capability profiles, I can customize what sort of VMs and what sort of offerings are available in this cloud. So we'll just roll with Hyper-V. There we go, and that's now created the cloud.
Thanks, Noel. Okay, so leveraging your existing investment, how many people in the audience only run Hyper-V in their environment? Oh, I didn't think I'd see any hands. That's great to see. But Microsoft realized that typically is not going to be the case. Most people run, you know, multiple different hypervisors within their environment. Even though we'll probably see that shift, I guarantee if in 3 years we ask that same question, there'll be a lot more people than just a handful putting their arm in the air to say that they're only running Hyper-V. So let's have a look at what Microsoft have done. So through VMM, we can manage multiple hypervisors. We can manage Hyper-V, we can manage VMware vSphere, and also Citrix Zen Server. The great thing about managing all of those three hypervisors within the one tool is that you've got that consistent experience. We can deploy virtual machines, we can deploy services to no matter which hypervisor you've got in your environment. Now, these are the versions that are currently supported on 2012. Hyper-V, and it's only 2008 R2, vSphere 4.1, and Zen Server 6.0. I know everyone would be saying that they are older technologies. Service Pack 1 that will be coming out later in the year will support vSphere 5 and obviously Server 2012. So the key is simplicity, giving your users that single consistent approach to management. It'll make your life a lot easier, and it is a really powerful tool to use. So I'll show you how it works. Firstly, the Virtual Machine Manager server will talk directly to all of the hosts within Hyper-V. Within a vSphere environment, they communicate via the Virtual Center, and that's a licensing requirement of VMware that any communication with hosts must go via the vCenter. And with the Zen servers, we can talk directly to the host because Citrix don't have the same licensing requirements. So when you've got these hosts in your environment, we could add them into individual host groups for each of the hypervisors, or we could have them all within the one host group. In my opinion, I don't see why there'd be any reason to separate them out into separate host groups, because we're just treating them all as compute resources. So keeping them in the same host group makes sense. And as Noel showed you, you've got the ability to select between your different profiles too when it comes to deployment. So we could say that we only want particular types of services on Hyper-V boxes, or other types of services only on Zen Server, or it could be a combination. We might allow them to be deployed right across all of the hypervisors. So we showed you how you can build private clouds easily. Now you want to be able to give specific users within your environment access to utilize the resources that are available within those private clouds. So next thing we need to do is actually go through the process of creating the user roles, assigning the users, and delegating that capacity. So Noel's going to take you through that process in the next lab.
Thanks, Justin. All right, so let's create a user role. So this user role we're creating, we're going to assign them access to the Contoso cloud that we just made before. So creating a new user role. So if you missed that, I was in settings, user roles, and then up the top, create new user role. Call it TechEd users. So here I can assign this user role as another administrator. I can give them read-only access, or I can make them a self-service user, which is what I'm going to do. And here I can assign the members to this role. This can be either a user or users or a group. Just take a few minutes. Here we go. So my user is called end user. And here I can assign them to different clouds. So while Justin was talking before, I created a couple of new clouds. So we'll just assign them to the Contoso cloud. These are the clouds I created to demonstrate my next point. So here's the thing. Now, you remember the last lab? I restricted the amount of resources that could be consumed within a particular cloud, so it didn't use up everything on my host, on my cluster. Here, I can restrict the amount of resources that this particular user role can consume within that cloud. And then I can lock this down even further to say individual users within this role can only consume 10 virtual CPUs, which is 50% of the role, and create 5 virtual machines. So that way, no single individual user within that role is going to use all the resources that are assigned to that role. And that user role is not going to be able to consume all the resources assigned to that cloud. So Virtual Machine Manager gives you a way of really getting down and granular with how resources are allocated when you provision your own private clouds. Here I can assign what this user role has access to. So this is all; these are all the VMware templates and the profiles that I have in my library. So let's just assign a service template and a couple of VM templates. And here I can assign what actions this user role can perform. So say I want them to be able to deploy VMs, but I only want them to deploy VMs from the templates that I create. So I just enable this. I want to be able to give them remote access and be able to shut down and start up the VMs. But say, you know, I don't want to give them local admin access for whatever reason. So this allows me to still maintain control over what the users are doing in my cloud, but still giving them the benefit of speed from being able to self-provision. Just assign them a run as account. And that's it. That's now created a new user role called TechEd users. There we go. Okay, so now, because I'm a data center admin, I can see everything naturally. But my user is not an administrator. So let's log into App Controller as them. So you can see I've logged in as my end user. And they only have access to the Contoso cloud, and we can see that they're using, at the moment, they're not using any of their virtual machine allocation or any of their CPU allocation. Now, the type of person that would log in to AppController to be able to see this sort of stuff, it would be either a power user or an IT operator or a business unit IT support person. And at the moment, because we just created a brand new cloud, we haven't got any virtual machines in there. But those actions that you saw me assign to the user role where I could restrict them on what they could do, if there were virtual machines in here that we could perform actions on, only those actions would be visible on this toolbar up the top.
All right, so the next thing I just want to take you through is deploying or standardizing application deployment. I'm sure everybody in the room's at some stage deployed a virtual machine from an existing template. So what Microsoft have included is this concept of a service template. So a service template is a way that we can actually define what a service looks like. And it could be something like a web application. In this example here, we've got a service template that is made up of three tiers. So we've got a web tier, an application tier, and a data tier. Within each of those tiers, we configure what that tier looks like. So it could include a virtual machine template, an OS profile, a hardware profile, and any number of application profiles. And you'll see that in the demo. But an application profile tells Virtual Machine Manager how to install an application. So in the example of SQL, it'll know where the source files are, and this is the process you need to go through to install SQL once you've laid down that virtual machine. So we've got an application tier and a data tier here, and it's just going to be the same process as I went through with the web tier. Now, when we also set up this service template, we could also dictate how many of those we want in each of that, or we could leave that up to the user to select. So rather than having to go and say, all right, I need a web server or a web service deployed, I need four virtual machines, I need to go through that process four times, then I need to get all my apps installed on there, now they can just go to a portal and say, I want a web service deployed, and it automatically goes and provisions all the infrastructure that they want. The other benefit about that is we can have some monitoring around that that says, you know what, once that web tier, we've deployed two nodes in that web tier, once it reaches a certain utilization, just go and deploy another tier so that we can bring that utilization down. So it has some smarts around the deployment based on what's defined within the service template. So in the example, when I use that service template, as an end user, it goes and deploys me automatically those different services on top of the necessary private cloud fabrics there. But back over to you, Noel, so you can show us how to actually do it.
All right, thank you. Okay, I might just zoom in a bit. Okay, so what we have here is a three-tier application I have called Talking Heads, so TH Service. Zoom in a bit more. Okay, so here you can see I have my web tier, I've got my SQL tier, and I've got my application tier. And inside each of these tiers, I've got my hardware settings, I've got my OS settings, and I have my application settings. So these application settings tell the service template how to deploy the app and what I'm deploying. So am I deploying an application? Is it an app V package? Is it a SQL database? Is it a web server? Whatever it is. So if we jump over to, so when I deploy this app, if we jump over to Virtual Machine Manager, now don't let the red X's put you off. So because these are VMs, you can't deploy a VM inside a VM, so that's why it doesn't work. So when I deploy this app, we can see in my cloud, in my Contoso cloud, it spins up the service, each tier deploys, and each virtual machine that's associated with that tier gets deployed. Jumping back to the template designer. So when this service gets deployed, it can do things like scale out the web service, as Justin mentioned. So I can set rules down here, if you can see down the bottom. I can set rules to say that when the utilization starts going up, start deploying more servers. And when the utilization contracts, I don't need those servers anymore, so we can reduce. So these are this is where I set the scale out rules for this particular tier. So let's zoom out. How many of you think that this looks really complicated? Couple? All right. It's not really. Let's have a look. All right, so if we jump over to the library, here I have templates and I have profiles. So the VM templates are obviously all my pre-configured virtual machine templates, you know, how much RAM, how much CPU, what OS. I have my service templates, which is what we were just looking at before. And I have my profiles. So here I have my hardware profiles, application profiles, and of course my capability profiles, which I spoke about before. So how does this work? So each virtual machine template is made up of profiles. And the profiles contain the settings for whatever it is. So if it's an application, if it's an SQL, so what we're SQL database. So what we're looking at here is the SQL settings. These are the profile settings. If you've ever deployed SQL before, these settings should be familiar. So we've got like the name, the instance name, we've got the run as accounts to use when SQL gets deployed. So why are we doing it this way? This is a modular approach to service delivery, and you'll see how this all joins together in a moment. By using different profiles with VM templates, it gives you the ability to change applications and service deployment within a few clicks. It also gives you consistency with your deployment and allows you to spin up large multi-tier applications. So let's create one. Okay, so let's create a service template. We'll call it TechEd application. Give it a version number. Okay, so we're going to create a two-tier application template. And you can see it's already pre-configured a workflow for me to just populate. So over here, I have my virtual machine templates. I can look at the properties of this particular template. Now, this is just an empty virtual machine template, but say I wanted this to be an SQL server. I just go into SQL configuration, and I say, this is an SQL server, and it uses this SQL server configuration that I did before. I can then drag and drop that over to my tier, and all of a sudden, there we are. I've just deployed an SQL server. I can do the same thing with a web server. So now I'm building my application. Now, if I wanted to add a different logical network, I just add a logical network, assign it, connect it. Now my web tier is talking to two different networks. So once my application is built, I just hit configure deployment up here, and this will start a deployment wizard that will give me some parameters that I can use to further customize the applications, and I can deploy this straight into my cloud. So templates can be used to pre-add roles and features to VMs when they spin up, and they can also be used to speed up the deployment of massive applications. You can quite easily just drag and drop and build your apps.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, buddy. All right, so that's really simple. So now you've got an easy way to build service templates for your end users, and it just gives you complete control over exactly what they can deploy. They don't have to have multiple tiers like Noel spun up then. You could just have single service templates that could be just a single tier that just says this is a web server, this is an application server, or this one's a database server. So that they want a little bit more control rather than you just dictating what the service is going to look like. But at least you're automating the process for the deployment for them. So now we've gone through how we can configure and deploy the private cloud infrastructure. We've talked about how it's designed to manage multiple hypervisors, how you can abstract your resources to build your private clouds, delegate access, and then control the deployment through the use of service templates. So what we wanted to finish off with is, you know, that was very much focused on using Virtual Machine Manager, particularly around self-service. So what we wanted to talk about now was actually how we could use another method using Service Manager and Orchestrator to actually manage the deployment of virtual machines in that environment. Did anybody come to my session with Jeff Cook yesterday? A couple of you? All right, you guys deserve a shirt. Hey, Noel, can you just go and... Can you give a couple of shirts out to those guys? Can you guys throw your hands up again? Well, what I wanted to say was, in addition to that, we're going to recover the same demo we finished off with in our session yesterday. So if you guys want to take an early mark, then here's your chance. Right. All right, so what we want to cover off on here is actually using System Center and Orchestrator to deliver your self-service. How many people have Service Manager in their environment? Anybody? One? Two? So hopefully, there's a couple, good. Hopefully if you do and you haven't thought about using it for Virtual Machine Manager deployment or Virtual Machine deployment, you might be able to get something out of this. Whoop. So for those that don't, Service Manager is Microsoft's IT service management tool that's included in System Center 2012. Probably one of the most compelling and powerful features is the integrated CMDB, because they have this connector, all of these connectors that sit below that that pull data from multiple different data sources and populate that CMDB. It delivers a self-service request and automation capabilities as well. So we have this service catalog with self-service requests that we can make available so the users can service themselves. And it's got powerful workflow and notifications as well. So within that, whenever we detect particular values that have been configured by the user within the service request, we can kick off a workflow, use that as a trigger to go and perform some type of action. And then Orchestrator is Microsoft's automation and orchestration tool. For anybody that has System Center and is licensed for System Center and doesn't have Orchestrator deployed, I really encourage you to do it. It's such a powerful tool. We're not going to have enough time in this demo to go through it in detail, but you will quickly see the runbooks at the very least. And what it does is it uses these integration packs to deliver the automation capability. So, for example, if we import the Active Directory integration pack, what you'll get then is you'll get a connection. So we set up a connection to a domain controller, put in a username and a password so that we've got access to manipulate things within that domain controller, and a series of activities like AD-related activities, create user, create computer, move computer, those type of activities that you would expect for an AD admin. It's got extremely tight integration with Service Manager, and that's via the Service Manager connector. And you can also take advantage of existing scripts. So if you've got scripts that are doing things in your environment now for automation, you can just use those scripts within script-based activities in the runbooks in Orchestrator. But the key here is predictable service delivery. So what we want to make sure is every time a user runs a service request, it's going to be performed exactly the same 100% of the time. So in my demo that I'm going to run you through, it's all about provisioning a virtual machine using Service Manager. So we need to pull objects, we need to know about the runbooks that are available in Orchestrator. So we've pulled them into the CMDB. We want to know about the virtual machine templates, the service templates that are available, the actual other virtual machines, the Hyper-V hosts that we've got available. So we pull them in via the Virtual Machine Manager connector. And we want to know about the users that are available in AD, so we pull them into the CMDB. So you can see how we're starting to populate the CMDB using the connectors available in Service Manager. So here's how it works. The user would go to the self-service portal, they would select a request offering that they actually want to submit. They'd fill in the necessary details, fill in all the user input forms, the necessary details, click submit, it would create them a service request, it would then return them details back to the screen indicating the service request number and the fact that it's in progress. A workflow would kick off, and that workflow typically would revolve or include some IT approval process. So a review activity would get started and someone would need to approve that before the service request can get completed. There will be a runbook sitting behind it, and the runbook is where all of our automation takes place. So the runbook, and you will see that, actually goes and performs a whole list of activities to get us to a desired result. Once that's completed, Service Manager will identify that the service request has been completed and it'll get marked as completed. The user will get notified that the service has been delivered and the service request has been satisfied. So the end user was able to go through that whole self-service process without having any intervention from IT other than them approving a request. So now I want to take you through a VM provisioning process using a number of components in the System Center product. We're going to use Service Manager, we're going to use Orchestrator, and we're going to use Virtual Machine Manager, but it's all going to be driven via a user just going through a self-service request in Service Manager. So here I am as a user, sitting at the home page of the self-service portal within Service Manager. Now, I'm an IT admin, so a user that's been granted permissions to access the Virtual Machine Manager services. So you can see here, there's a VM service request service offering available to me as a user. I'm going to click on that. It'll show me the available request offerings that I can select from. So I'm going to say, I want to create a virtual machine now in a private cloud that we've got. Go to the request form and it'll bring up all the user inputs. Now these user inputs that you can see here, the virtual machine templates, the VM size, and also the private cloud names have all been imported from Virtual Machine Manager into Service Manager for me to use. So I'm just going to use, that's fine, I'll make it a medium server so it's a little bit bigger. We'll put it in demo private cloud. We'll give it a name. Justification. We can review all of the properties of that service request I'm about to get created. I'm going to click Submit. It's going to create that service request for me, and it's going to return the service request number back to me in the console. Now the great thing about using Service Manager for automating these types of service requests is we can take advantage of all the notifications and all of the tracking that's available in Service Manager. So I'll show you why. If we come into the Service didn't want to jump out of that just yet. Hop into the Service Manager console, I'll show you the actual template. So anytime a service request gets created in Service Manager, it relies on a template. So that's this one that I'm using here, Create Virtual Machine in Private Cloud Template. And what a template does is it predefines a number of activities. So this is where we can build our workflow that we want to take place. So what I've got is just a title, urgency, and priority. Nothing overly complex there. But activities is where we've made some customizations. So there's three activities in here. We've got a runbook that starts, first of all, to go and work out who should actually approve this service request. And we base that on the title of a user that we've got in our Active Directory and also within our CMDB. Then we have a review activity, which is where we need someone's approval to actually go and kick off the VM creation process. Once we've gained that approval, we're going to actually kick off another runbook that will go and actually perform the creation process. So the reason we have this runbook up the top here, for those couple of you that do have Service Manager would understand that the review activities is a little bit limited. And the reason that is because when you go into the review activity, you have to manually specify who the reviewer is going to be. So that's not always necessarily the best option for us because we want some flexibility around defining who the reviewers can be. So what we like to do is we actually like to use a runbook that defines or gives us some dynamic capability around populating those review activities. So we have one up here that looks for the user that with the title Virtualization Manager. So I'm going to show you who that user is, and then we should be ready to go and review and approve that activity. Absolutely. all it's doing, all I'm using, well, there's multiple different ways you could do it. You could use the get user activity in the runbook, or you could just use PowerShell and look up whatever you want. Yeah. So you can see here, this user's got the title virtualization manager in their name. So the really powerful thing about being able to do this is if this user leaves our organization, we haven't hard-coded that user in our review activities. We might have hundreds of runbooks, or hundreds, sorry, of service request templates with review activities. We don't want to have to go and manually update all of them. So by doing it this way, all we need to do is bring our new user on board, put them, make sure they've got the right title in AD, and they're automatically going to become the reviewer for these service requests. So I'll jump in. Hopefully we've got some notifications. Firstly, from the requesting user. So the requesting user has been notified by Service Manager that a service request has been created, and there's some details about that service request.
I'm assuming you can assign that to a group. What?
In Service Manager? You can. In Service Manager, you can assign it to a group. The problem with that is that only one person in the group can approve it. So as soon as one person approves it, it's just marked as approved. So again, when we want to use a group, we have a runbook that actually enumerates all the users in the group and then inserts them all individually, so they all have to approve. And you don't have to say that it has to be a unanimous approval either. You could say that only 50% of the group needs to approve.
So you can take one user from that group and approve it.
And then it's marked approved. Yeah, so that's the limitation with the native support, which is why we use the runbooks. And they'll see by who. We haven't got our notification yet, but we'll go in and have a look at the service request. It should have come through by now. So this is the open service request that was created, and we'll see the workflow that's actually in progress. Across to activity. Actually, I'll come down and I'll show you. It actually also keeps track of the user input. And that's really nice for tracking so that we can see exactly why they wanted it created, when they wanted it created. Come across to my activities. We can see that the runbook has been completed. The approved VM creation step is currently in progress. I'll open that up for you and show you that the user has been added into that approval step for us automatically by the runbook. So when we come across, you can add as many as you like, yeah, and they can be sequential or parallel. Add as many as you like. Yeah, so we could go in there now. As long as you're adding it after one, you can't add it before one that's, you know, you're following the process. But I could add another one in there now because there's still ones that haven't started and it would have to be completed before the service request could be completed. Yeah. So logged in as Stevie Wonder into the self-service portal, and if I come across to my activities, we're going to see in there that there's going to be a review activity waiting for him to approve. Can see at the top there, so he should have received an email by now, which he has, indicating that a review activity is waiting for him to do something. So you kept up to date all the time as well, which is really nice. So I'm going to approve that so that we can get our VM creation process underway. So that's approved. I'll hop back into the console and we'll see that activity actually get approved and the next runbook kick off as well.
Should give away some stuff.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah. All right, we've got three more t-shirts to give away. Four more t-shirts, but I might keep one in the bank for, sure, at the end of the session.
All right, what are the three types of hypervisors supported by Virtual Machine Manager 2012? Well done. Sorry. All right. So that's kicked off now. I'll jump back into our VMM and we'll have some more questions to get rid of the rest. All right. So I'm going to hop across to my Orchestrator server here. And under our virtualization runbooks, we'll see this create VM with private cloud. And you can see how easy it is. There's only a couple of activities in there to complete the creation of a virtual machine. We're starting the runbook, so we're passing some parameters from Service Manager. We're writing to the event log, and that's purely for debugging. We're creating the virtual machine, which is an activity from the Virtual Machine Manager integration pack. And we can see them over on the side. I'll quickly show you them at the end. We can get the virtual machine so that once we've actually built it, and then we're starting it up and sending an email notification, and that's it. So I'll show you, I'll just expand this, and I'll show you what the actual integration packs look like. So on the side here, when you import an integration pack, they appear on the right-hand side here. So for Active Directory, you can see they're very much Active Directory-related activities. And to use it, it's as simple as grabbing it from the task pane and dragging it onto your workspace. Extremely easy. So that one's underway. You can see it started logging each of the activities. We can jump across to VMM. We'll go to jobs. And we can see that that creation process is now underway. So what we wanted to do with that demo was purely show you that you're not just limited to the tools like VMM or App Controller to control this as well. We can make this self-service available when it comes to managing your virtual machines or your services within your private clouds through other tools as well, like Orchestrator and Service Manager. So please fill out your evals. I know it's the last session and you're probably busting to get out of here. I don't even know if there's any mice left to give away, but your evals are important. They do mean a lot to us. The sessions will be online in the coming weeks as well on the Channel 9. It's not just the Australian Tech Ed, though. I don't know if anyone is familiar with that, but Microsoft put all of the Tech Ed events online, so you'll be able to get access to content from Tech Ed North America as well as Tech Ed Europe. So there's some really valuable sites of videos and slide decks available online. So I want to thank everybody for sticking around. Please, if you've got any questions or anything like that, please come on up at the end. Do you want to give away those last couple of shirts?
Yep. And we've got posters too.
Oh, yeah. We've got a pile of Hyper-V posters. I don't even know if we're going to ask for questions.
Yeah, if you want one, just come up and grab them.
So
take one home.
All right. But, yeah, really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for coming along.
Yeah.